and welcome to Show Me Your Mic, the podcast where I talk about podcasting. You can find it online at goodstuff.fm/smym or on Twitter at smym_fm. I'm your host, Chris Enns, and for this episode, I've got Jeremy Cherfis of Eat This Podcast, where he talks about and interviews guests on any and all aspects of food, just not cocktails or restaurant reviews. He actually does a lot of interviews on site at conferences and events, and so we spend a good time talking about the gear and techniques he uses for getting great interviews with people milling around you. My thanks to Campaign Monitor for sponsoring this episode of Show Me Your Mic. A little more about them later on in the show. Be sure to tune in, listen to the end. Special Good Stuff related event announcement you may not have heard about yet. And also an email newsletter sign up. So now, here's my conversation with Jeremy. So welcome to Show Me Your Mic, Jeremy. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks, Chris.
It's we have a unique or interesting history that I had completely blanked on before from going back to the, well, it wasn't that short-lived. I was going to say app.net had a short-lived history, but it's still going.
Hey, stop talking about it in the past tense.
I gave up on it maybe when I felt, it was a combination of, this feels like explaining a dating relationship or something where I just got busy, things happened, work got, you know, busy, and I didn't have time to invest in it. And but then all of a sudden I logged in, and I must have turned off notifications or email notifications a long time ago, which right. I usually do on most of these services. And so I didn't actually see that there is people actually had asked me a question about a recent episode. I mean, this is a couple months ago now.
Yeah.
And but going back many months ago, you and I had been back and forth when I was more active on there, and you know, just chatting about podcast stuff or whatever, and then didn't connect the dots until.
No, yeah. And then I think you also put me in touch with Adactio, Keith, because I love Huff Duffer. In fact, I think it was you who turned me on to Huff Duffer.
Nice.
And but I still have problems with it, and I wish that those problems would go away, but they're not of my making. They're of his making, or rather they're more of other people's makings. And you put me in touch with him, which is great too, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's a neat connection. And yeah, I think the main issue is probably, is it SoundCloud still that's causing struggles?
Yeah.
And I know he's cracked some code, but I'm sure as just like many of those kind of services, as he fixes something, then SoundCloud changes it.
They change it. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, SoundCloud is part of the problem. I think the other problem, frankly, is podcasters, and I'm possibly among them, as podcasters who don't understand that with a few tweaks to what they're actually posting, they can make life a lot easier for people who do want to huff-duff it. And I don't know how other people manage, but I find interesting stuff to listen to via huff-duffer. And so I want to be able to share stuff I've found. Yeah.
Yeah. What's your handle on Huffduffer?
Jeremy Cherfis. Yeah. I use my real name everywhere, just about everywhere. Okay. It makes it easier for me to remember.
Yeah, definitely. I'll put that in the show notes so folks can find the interesting stuff that you might listen to. And we'll talk about podcasts you listen to more later on in the show. But that's just obviously a great way to find sometimes more random episodes. That's how I use it anyways. That kind of thing. So, there's an interview. I'll just do this little plug right now before, because I know I'll forget later. An interview with Jeremy Keith on Show Me Your Mic. That's going back a few episodes, but I'll again put that link in the show notes too, so you can hear that. Episode 36 it was.
Yeah, I remember listening to that back at the time when we were talking to each other.
Yeah.
And some of it was completely beyond me, and the rest of it was really good.
Yeah, I wish, not that we have to go too long on Huffduffer, but I kind of wish Jeremy would, easy for me to say, I know he has plenty of talents and skills, so he's not lacking in terms of things to do or be occupied with, but I sometimes wish he'd just charge sort of like an Instapaper kind of thing, charge $5 or whatever a year or $10 a month or I don't know, whatever it would be, but to make it a proper paid service in some respects, but, or at least, yeah. But that's,
well, that's two of us with money waiting for him.
Yeah, oh, there you go. It's probably not enough to keep a service running, but it's a start. So we'll see where he goes. Yeah. Anyways, all that to say, you're on this show now because you have a podcast called Eat This Podcast, which is a great name for a show, by the way.
Thank you.
Your byline for your bio comes out every 2 weeks and talks about any and all aspects of food, and specifically not cocktails or restaurant reviews, which I kind of like. looks like you started roughly like early 2013.
Yeah, March 2013, I think. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
And so what, was this your first foray into podcasting or how?
Not entirely, not entirely. I should confess that I've worked in broadcast radio and TV long ago.
You have to confess.
and I think that experience and I love radio. I absolutely love radio. I think it was Orson Welles who said that having a movie studio was the best train set a boy could have. Well, I think having a radio station is the best train set a boy could have. And so I'd played around. I've always done bits of recording and stuff like that. And I tried to get my previous job interested in regular podcasts. But then I just thought, you know, the heck with it. I'm just going to do it. So I did it. I did it. You know, if I'd known then what I know now, I might have done it slightly differently. But my goal is to produce interesting podcasts about food in the widest sense. So history, archaeology, geography, sociology, economics. It's using food to look at the world, really. And I can get all pretentious and say, well, you know, we all have to eat and this is something we all can relate to. But it's actually because I find it absolutely fascinating. I love following the connections. I love understanding what's going on in different aspects of food. And so it's a sort of indulgence for me. I get to ask people, get to talk to people about things that fascinate me and share them with listeners. And that's what drives me, really.
Is your background in food or just more of a cook, chef, you know, like to make food?
My background is in biology. I mean, I trained as a biologist and then I've worked in communications ever since finishing my PhD. I'm really a journalist. I see myself as a journalist between the worlds of biology and the worlds of and the rest of the world, if you like, translating scientific research and other kinds of academic research in order that I can understand it and then pass it on. But it does inform. I mean, my biology informs my own cooking and many of the things I do. I bake a lot of bread myself using sourdough starters. I make my own yogurt. I do pickles, lacto-fermented pickles. So, you know, I'm very aware of the chemistry of cooking and some of the physics of cooking and a lot of the biology of cooking. And that's really, yeah, it's beyond mere cooking, if you like. Although I shouldn't say mere cooking. I think cooking is one of the great things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what I found so interesting is, you know, I got you were another person who had submitted or whatever it's called to the proposed to be on the show, so to speak, and saw the byline for the show, Eat This Podcast, and was sort of expecting, you know, recipe cooking show or whatever, which is kind of, you know, fairly popular, that style of blog anyways, for sure. Podcast. But yeah, it was surprising and pleasantly surprised to hear it was more just the history or the everything else about the food than the actual cooking per se.
Thanks. And I mean, I have done recipes, but not in any great detail.
Yeah. And I think that's a great way, again, of like I've often talked about on this show, of sort of exploring a niche or a topic from a different angle than other people are. And that brings listeners that are less interested or already have that area filled and need something different, a different look at.
Right.
At those kind of things. And even the one episode I was just listening to before we started recording is the Kazakhstan apple forest episode, mm-hmm. which if I just saw it in a list, I would have probably skipped by and not thought anything of it. because it's not something that's as of interest to me directly, but then listening to it, there actually is a connection where you're talking, your guest on the show He was mentioned.
Ben Reed, yeah.
Yeah, had mentioned something to the effect of having to go to Kyrgyzstan to get his passport and stuff, and just other things that came up. Nothing to do with apples, obviously.
Yeah.
But, and I, my father-in-law actually used to work in Kyrgyzstan many years ago in mining and stuff like that. And so there's just, yeah, funny little connections to the world that wouldn't have otherwise come.
Right. And you know, another thing he talked about was that, you know, the Russians planted Red Delicious in Kazakhstan. And, you know, that's a whole nother story. Why on earth did they do that? I could go chasing that rabbit hole forever.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. Well, I'm glad you liked it. Thank you.
Yeah, and that's what I think is the interesting idea. And there's, I know previous guests have mentioned some podcasts like this where sort of history, if you're, you can be a history buff and probably really love that stuff, but also just the casual connections of things that you wouldn't otherwise know or be aware of and why, and that you can, like what you said, just following the rabbit trail of why some of those things have happened throughout history and not just assuming it's always been there or whatever the angle might be. So you're doing a bi-weekly show every couple weeks.
Yeah, I just I've just started something silly, which is doing trailers in the week in between. I got a sort of between 1 and 2 minutes and that. I'm not too sure about it because without having a schedule, you know, it's very hard to say. I mean, you have a schedule. I kind of release them every other Monday, but you podcasting's funny that way. You can't say tune in next week or tomorrow or whatever it is. You just put it out there. So I'm just hoping to pique people's interests and maybe get a bit more interest that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is tough because, I mean, for all intents and purposes, this episode of you and I talking now live on, you know, Tuesday, November 11th, 2014 could very well be someone listening to it a year from now, assuming I'm paying my bills. And and there's, yeah, tune in Tuesday next week or whatever.
Any sense.
Yeah, and added to that is, like we were talking about before we started recording, is we do stream live here, goodstuff.fm, so people can tune in live if they want to on the actual day. And so then, yeah, it's almost like in a blog post or whatever where it automatically updates the date to be relative to the current time. Somehow need the machines to be able to go back through and edit the words to be time sensitive or time relative. So, but that'd be a little ways away. How do you go about sort of picking a topic? Is it sort of whatever catches your fancy that week, or do you prepare sort of schedule for yourself in advance, or what's your inspiration?
I have about 1,000 RSS feeds in in NewsBlur, something like that. No, maybe it's 600. I can't remember. I've never actually counted. I zip through those a lot. I read some other blogs that deal with food history, food studies. I go to conferences. I love going to conferences. In fact, Eat This Podcast started for me at a food conference, the Oxford Symposium on Food and Cooking in 2012, which I'd been going to before then, but I took my recorder along and thought, yeah, well, we'll see what happens. And it then took me about 6-7 months to get round to actually doing it. Conferences are brilliant because you find people who haven't necessarily made a name for themselves, but have a really interesting story to tell. And it's really, if I can get the time away from work and can afford to go, it's really efficient for me because, you know, in 2-3 days I can get, well, the last one I went to was in June in Perugia in Tuscany, and I got, well, in Umbria, I should say, good Lord, they'll shoot me. And I, you know, I got 3-4 stories there in a matter of days, plus went to all these interesting talks. So, but yeah, I just keep my eyes open. I think that's also part of the journalist training, if you like. My training's too pompous a word, but you know, I'm always on the lookout for stories and things that other people may say, well, that's pretty trivial, or that's not of interest to me, might just pique my interest, and then I'll go off and look, and sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should mention for folks who are not aware, maybe you're located, You sound like you're in England. You're actually located in Rome right now, right?
I live in Rome. Yeah. I live in Rome. I've been here 14 years. Yep.
Nice. And so that, again, the ability to have vast international guests, or what's the word, not vast, but a variety of international guests at your doorstep almost, is a nice perk, I guess, of podcasting.
It is and it isn't. I mean, Rome is indeed a good place to because a lot of people come through who are involved in food and agriculture, but you often don't know about it. I mean, things like the Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN, FAO, World Food Program is here, EFAD, which is the International Fund for Agricultural Development, is here. But they kind of keep themselves to themselves, and they don't really, they're not really public. And so although, I mean, I have a press card, although I can go in on my press card, usually you don't find out about things until they're over.
Right.
on the other hand, when people say, I'll be in Rome, that's great for me. And I try and do that. But much more so, it's this internet thing. I mean, the internet is just for this kind of thing, it's just superb. You can reach out to anybody with email. Almost everybody has Skype. If they don't, I've done a couple of recordings to landlines using Skype at my end. It works fine. Not nearly as good as Skype on both ends. And, you know, that's what makes it possible. I mean, what used to cost £5,000 to produce half an hour of radio at the BBC or a commercial station, it's essentially free apart from time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's incredible. There's no way I would be having a conversation with someone in Rome and recording it at reasonably high quality a few years
ago. No way.
And never mind publishing it on top of that after.
Exactly. So, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it's crazy. And sometimes we don't stop to think and sort of at the fast pace that everything goes, stop to sort of figure out or remember how quickly this has all been made possible, actually, relatively speaking. So you do a mix of live in-person interviews with Skype style discussions? Is that?
I never broadcast live.
Right.
Everything is edited. But my raw material is either face to face or recorded over the internet. I think the quality from Skype is terrific. I record myself locally. The quality of Skype is great and has got better. FaceTime is even better. If people have FaceTime, I find the quality I get out of FaceTime is even better. It's much harder, though, to test. You know, there's so many. I use a little outboard mixer, and so you can send the signal to your guest. And there are so many variables that having the Skype call testing service is brilliant. And sometimes when I've been replugging things, I'll have to make 10, 15 calls to that to get it right. There's nothing like that for FaceTime. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to someone on app.net, Jason, and there was another, who was it? Red Queen Coda, who's doing audio stuff on app.net. She does audio stuff. She's on app.net. And I've said, look, if you guys could build a FaceTime callback service, the world would beat a path to your door. But maybe it's very difficult, or maybe they're just not interested.
Well, that's an interesting idea. I actually hadn't thought of that for folks to use. I know I remember using that years ago, but the sort of Skype, it's like a bot of some sort, pre-recorded voice that you just can call to test rather than,
absolutely,
you know, bugging a friend or whatever to test with if they're asleep or otherwise.
Exactly. For FaceTime, I bug my wife, but she's not interested in hanging on the line. So I call her and you know, take her iPod Touch into another. Yeah, it's lunacy. It's lunacy. I don't do it anymore.
That's interesting. So, well, let's talk a bit about some of the gear you're using to record with, since you mentioned.
Okay.
So you've got, I guess, the recorder you said you use at conferences. You mentioned talking with people there. What type of device or what are you using to do that?
I got a reasonably new recorder. I got it early this year. It's a Roland R26 digital recorder, 4 channels, 2 XLR in. How much tech rubbish do you want? It's beautiful. I love it. It's really effective for me. I used to have a much smaller little Roland R9, and it was. It was great. It was terrific for a couple of years, but it couldn't it 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 had the switches were so tiny, one of them just eventually popped out. But this R26 is great. It has built-in amp, built-in mics, four built-in mics, and two XLR inputs. It's great. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Are you using the built-in mics typically, or do you bring along mics?
No, I use the built-in mics if I want to. If we're recording somewhere noisy, I will record, because all the tracks are separate. So I will use the built-in mic sometimes to get ambient noise to do wallpaper, you know, for as wild track essentially. But I use my main kind of stick mic is an Electro Voice RE50, workhorse, very good. Takes a lot of beating. But it suffers from the one big problem of all stick mics, which is that some speakers just back away from it, you know, no matter how carefully you hold the mic. And it does need to be fairly close, especially in a busy place. And so I have two little Sony condenser clip-ons, you know, lapel mics. And those are great, you know, because I can put one of those on me. I can put one of those on the guest. We can be sitting 4 feet apart. They're each going into one channel. So when I come to do the mix, I have I have control over both of them separately. And people do forget about those. They never really forget about a stick mic in their face.
With the stick mic, just going back to that, that's sort of like your, you know, quick, I need to just quickly do an interview, and you're going back and forth with the mic between you and your guest, sort of, that idea?
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And then, do you know, it might matter for some folks, I guess, if you happen to know, but the lavalier mic or the lapel mics, right, that you're using, what model type you're using?
Oh, it's a Sony ECM50.
ECM50, okay.
Yeah, I mean, stunning little mic. Stunning little. I want to buy... It's interesting. You ask the questions. I'll
that's okay.
I'll try and remember what I wanted to say.
Well, going from that, I guess just following that, your sort of field kit version of recording, does that go straight into the R26, or is there a preamp of some sort that you have to
straight in?
Oh, nice.
Yep. Straight in to record. If I head out to record, I've got a tape recorder. I've got stick mic, two lapel mics, and a pair of headphones.
Nice.
And that's plenty.
Yeah. And so then obviously I'm just looking at the R26. There's, you know, levels and meters and stuff on there that you can see.
Yeah. And there's a really cool, I mean, it has all the stuff like voice activated and automatic gain control, which I never use. Mm-hmm. But it has a rather cool auto level sensor. So whatever mic you've plugged in, you press a little button, you speak for about 5 seconds, and it says, hey, set the input level to this. And you do it, and it generally you get terrific results.
Nice. And so that really also then, nice. So you have, whether you're using you wouldn't necessarily use the handheld mic as well as the lapels, or would you?
I've never tried that. I've been tempted once or twice, but I've never actually tried it. It doesn't seem worthwhile. Mm-hmm. What I'd like to try is a shotgun. I've used a shotgun mic, but I've never done a kind of shotgun recording where I could have the mic down at my knees, say, and just tilt it from one of us, you know, from one to the other.
Yeah.
I've never tried that. And it's kind of expensive to play with. You know, I keep thinking that would be my next. Well, that would be one of my next purchases. would be a shotgun mic. I know that they're much more widely used in the US than they are, than my experience of them anyway, in the UK or Europe.
Mm-hmm. And do you try and, like, when you're at a conference and just sort of looking for, I guess, tips for people who might try this? Whether obviously, you know, many fields have an interest to have conferences of various types, and so whether you're web design or food or whatever kind of conference it might be, grabbing a guest at a conference, do you try and like sort of look for a room or just kind of go with a corner of a hall or whatever?
I try to go somewhere reasonably quiet, but mostly because I don't want people disturbing us. It's not for the audio silence, because one of the good things about the stick mic versus lapel mics or maybe not versus a shotgun, certainly versus the built-in mics, which I wouldn't use, is that the stick mic is basically not very sensitive. And so if you've got it 4 inches from somebody's chin, under their chin, you pick up a little noise, but not so much. So I want a little bit of noise in there, because otherwise you've got echoey stuff and you've got artifacts and you know, there's no point pretending you're in a studio. Mm-hmm. So I tend to prefer just to take them to one side, but not in the main crush of people. Because if you're in the main crush of people, it is astonishing how people can walk by. They can see you and another person talking intently to one another. You're wearing headphones. You're holding a microphone. The other person is talking to you, and they'll come up and say hello. I mean, it's a major frustration sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know if they might not do it in Canada here, because we're a little more apologetic sensitive to, they'd at least come up and say sorry, maybe if they bump into you.
Sorry, but, hello. Yeah.
But I can certainly appreciate that, and you'd get all types, I guess, at conferences.
You do.
So you've got your. I'm trying to think of. Do you use big over-the-ear headphones, or just kind of like inconspicuous iPod style or whatever headphones?
Depends. Mm. I've got. I have a pair of closed over-the-ear headphones. I don't like them that much. They're noise-reducing, Bose noise-reducing. And I tend not to take those with me. I've got a pair of open, large Sennheiser headphones that work perfectly well for me. I monitor with those.
So I guess, yeah, you don't want to be, just like the scenario where you said somebody comes up behind you, you kind of want to know you're in a place where...
People. Absolutely. And I often take one ear off. So I've got one ear that's monitoring what's coming out of the tape and one ear that's listening.
And that's, but also the importance of monitoring yourself and the recording is probably vastly underappreciated. Maybe for folks who haven't done that, where you record it, I've done this myself with video interviews and stuff where I think, oh, it's good. I know what it's going to sound like. And then you actually put headphones on and all of a sudden you realize there's a cricket in the person's jacket or something that's being recorded.
Yeah, no, it's vital. It's vital to do that. I think, you know, that's one of the things I would always say, whatever you can do it with, whether you can do it, you know, you said earbuds. Yeah, sure. If that's all you got, use them. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, any other gear that you bring to a conference, or like those kind of live, or not live, but you know what I'm talking about, in-person recordings?
But what I want, and what I was going to say earlier, I think... I mean, in a pinch, I have recorded on my iPhone using the built-in mic on the earbuds. It's vastly better than the built-in mic of the phone itself. And I've done video interviews like that, and I've taught. I mean, I teach people video, and I always say, you know, you've got to get better audio, because video camera audio is complete rubbish. Mm-hmm. I bought one of those kits that supposedly allows you to plug your mic into an iPhone, and it's rubbish too. I can't get a signal out of it. They're those wonderful giant squid mics. Have you come across those? Giant squid. I forget the URL now, but there's a guy who hand makes the most beautiful little mics. But they're not good for, so far. You can rig them with a preamp to an iPhone, but they're not, it's not easy. What I would love to have, because you don't need all the bells and whistles of the Roland tape recorder. I would keep mics in my pocket or in my bag to use with my phone if I could. Because you don't always take your tape recorder with you, or I don't. And I miss opportunities that way. And what I would really love to have would be a good, solid Lavalier lapel mic going into the iPhone, preferably with as little coming in the way as possible. That would be great. That would be great.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know I've seen folks using that kind of stuff, and obviously each, you know, your mileage may vary as far as what kind of quality you get out of them. And so if there's somebody out there listening who's, you know, banging their head against the screen or whatever, saying, no, you've got to try X, Y, or Z, whatever.
Yeah, let us know.
I'd love to hear about it. And even come on the show. If you visit goodstuff.appointlet.com, that's how you can get to the booking thing to come on the show. And I'll put a link in the show notes for that, of course. I put it at the top of the page on the broadcast page for Show Me Your Mic. So goodstuff.fm/SMYM is where you can find Show Me Your Mic and all previous episodes, and as well as that link. So yeah, that's definitely to have for all intents and purposes, a full powerful computer that you could almost edit the whole show on your phone in your pocket, but not have great audio to it. That's kind of frustrating.
Yeah, no, people are doing it. I mean, people are, you know, radio journalists are using iPhones effectively as a studio in their pockets, as a digital audio workstation, and then connecting through dedicated servers to their home base, and it's remarkable what you can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one I'd heard of, it's like I'm going to butcher it. I think it's a Rode XY mic or YX, I forget what the... I don't have any experience with IXY mic is the one I'm thinking of. I have zero experience with it as far as quality or anything like that. It looks like Rode, I know, does a decent job with their mics, but I haven't experimented with this. It looks neat. My hesitation with any of that kind of stuff is often, changing an iPhone and Apple changes their style of their phone, let's say, and you upgrade, and then your mic is all of a sudden useless because they change where the jack is or something like that.
Sure.
So
sure.
That's my hesitation. I guess for those of us with more disposable income for the podcast, that might be something to check out. Or if you're less cheap than me. All right. Well, before we go, we'll go back to your, virtually speaking, we'll go back to your apartment or your studio, I guess, where you get to editing. Before I do that, I just want to pause briefly for a quick sponsor break. This episode of Show Me Your Mic is brought to you by Campaign Monitor, their service we have talked about a lot here at Good Stuff, and we've been proud to say that they've been a founding sponsor since Good Stuff first began. Their service that allows you to send emails to friends, clients, potential customers, listeners of a podcast network, for example, sign up at goodstuff.fm/newsletter. We use Campaign Monitor to send out our weekly-ish newsletter that we put together of recent news here at Good Stuff. And I play with the template each week, and I think I've settled on what we're going to use now going forward as a format. But for the first 10 or 15 issues of the newsletter, I would choose a new template each time, just start from scratch. And they say their byline is about 60 seconds, and I think pretty much even less than that as far as getting the actual template up and going, and then just throwing our content in, obviously, takes a little longer than 60 seconds, depending on how much content you have. And with features like geolocation segments, where you can target certain areas of the world, Rome or Saskatoon, for example, or sending, you know, personalized emails with, you know, first name, last name, all that kind of stuff is there. Their service that they use for showing you the reports from your newsletters that you send out is equally awesome and fun to sort of share within our Good Stuff Slack chat room. Each time I send out a newsletter, I throw a link to the sort of looks like a Google Maps style view of the newsletter going out, and you can see it actually live on the screen as it gets opened or shared or linked or whatever to around the world. It just gives a really neat visual to the listeners, or in your case, maybe customers or clients of your newsletter as they open it, wherever they happen to be in the world. So check out campaignmonitor.com. Our thanks to them for supporting Good Stuff and Show Me Your Mic. Okay, so you're in the field, you got your audio recorder, let's say, you bring it back to studio, whatever that means. And what are you using at home these days to edit and get it into the computer and that kind of stuff?
I take the SD card out. I put the SD card in the side of my Mac, transfer the file, and I use Reaper to do my editing.
Nice.
I was using Amadeus, which is a super little program. Nothing against Amadeus. but it wasn't quite as good as I wanted. There were things I started itching to be able to do, and so I started exploring alternatives, and I looked at Hindenburg, and I'm not sure why I settled on Reaper, but the other thing about producing a podcast like this, like mine, is you want different things from what the music industry wants. I talk to musician friends of mine about de-umming and how to make de-umming as easy as possible, and they don't know what I'm talking about. Reaper doesn't either, but it seems so incredibly extensible. I can't do it, but other people have done it. So I find editing in Reaper much, much quicker than it was for me in other programs. I never really got to grips with GarageBand. I never really even tried, frankly. Reaper is now where I go. But I do feel, and I've said this on app.net, and I've said it elsewhere and in conversation with friends, I do feel that there is a market for a speech-based or a speech-heavy digital audio workstation. I never really got to grips with Hindenburg. I think it might be that thing, where you can put down a music track if you want, one or two, but you know, basically it's about cutting and pasting speech. But I find Reaper does all that for me and more. The price is right. It's about $60 to pay for, and actually they let you use it for free forever. But I'm against that in principle. So that's that. And then I mix down to MP3. I put it into iTunes to get the artwork in. I bring it back out of iTunes. I store it on Amazon S3, and I publish using a WordPress blog and the Blueberry plugin. Mm-hmm. And that's the deal.
Yeah.
It's not ideal. It's not ideal for me. I would like more control over the feed, but it's just not something I have time to get into.
How so? Is there something specific that Blueberry isn't doing that you'd like, or just...
It's very hard to preview the... I don't know. I think it depends on what you want people to see, particularly on a device. There are some people whose show notes go on for screens and screens and screens, and mine do, because I think it's putting the whole of the show notes in. I don't want an excerpt, though. I think it's just kind of laziness on my part that I can't dedicate myself enough to what the things I want to do. I would like to have written show notes, and if you like, sleeve notes, I guess I'd call them, that go with each podcast, and that show up on the screen of your device when you're listening to it. But I don't want the two to be equal, really. And at the moment, they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a kind of a bit of an all or nothing thing. And also probably sort of chicken and the egg, as there's so many different podcast players out there that it'll be hard for the RSS developer feed people to figure out a standard. You know, it's
gotten, it would
10 years ago, maybe they could have settled on something where it was like, you know, main description and then show notes would be a secondary item in the feed or something. But and there's certainly each app, like I said, does it differently, and some are better than others as far as displaying it. And that is true, like the ability to preview that, and there's, you know, short of actually just publishing your show or your episode, there isn't really a way to preview it on your phone, let's say, how it's going to look.
And you know, once it's out there, it's out there, and I haven't actually come to grips with what happens when you edit it afterwards. Do people who find the feed after the edit see the edit? It's all too complex.
I think in my limited, maybe one step ahead of you in understanding, not very far ahead, but is that idea that it's a live thing. So as somebody tomorrow, if you change it tonight, then tomorrow that people would see the updated version. And even people who, again, depends on the player. Some players cache that item until you force a refresh, and they wouldn't actually see it. Because often I've seen people say, like, you have to mark it as played or delete it if they've changed, you know, say the MP3 file was corrupted or whatever, and then they remark it as unread, and then it'll download the new one or whatever. So, it's that the ultimate flexibility of it, but tweaking it and customizing that item is still not as good as, you know, simply editing a blog post or whatever, where can do that.
Not yet. Yeah. Not yet.
And that's what I was going to echo to your sentiments. As far as a dedicated digital audio workstation of some sort for podcasting, it's tough to know how. Obviously, everybody says this is the year of podcasting again, and so it feels like there's a whole bunch of people doing this stuff. But whether the actual market in terms of paying customers is big enough is always, I'm sure, for a developer to know. But
I think a whole lot of people. It's interesting how many people are coming out of radio. I mean, you've got the whole Radiotopia thing. You've got Alex Bloomberg doing his startup podcast company. A lot of people are coming out of radio, and they know things like Logic Pro. I came out of quarter inch tape and had an engineer. Right. And so a digital audio station was perfect for me. It's just a miracle. It's a complete miracle. I couldn't justify the time to learn to use some of the more complicated things. I'm barely scratching the surface on Reaper. Mm-hmm. You know, people who make music on Reaper would laugh at what I do.
Well, you mentioned extensibility. Is that where something, I'm guessing there's sort of plugins or track automation that you've downloaded?
There's plugins up the wazoo. I mean, you know, that plus all the post processing. I mean, all the effects you could want in the world. Mm-hmm. Plus, you can change the way everything looks. Absolutely everything is changeable. And people build themes for it that suit them, and you can change the sensitivity, the meters. You can do apps. Yeah, really. I don't want to sound like a broken record, because as I say, I barely know it. What I do know is that the forums are terrific and very helpful, super techy if that's what you're after, and super friendly if you want to say, hey, how do I do this? They'll tell you. I've learned an awful lot about mixdowns, for example. Like I say, when I started, I had an engineer to do that kind of stuff. But learning about mixing, learning about, you mentioned track automation. Yeah, you can do, when I'm doing music, it'll watch you. So you can play with it, your mouse or a slider of some sort. And then clean it up afterwards if you went too low or too high or too quick or too slow. It's fabulous for that. But I think they all do that. I think Logic does that. Lots of things do that.
Yeah. But it's one of those ones that's off the radar of a lot of, I find anyways, North American folks. I don't know if there's a reason why it's sort of European divide from North America. Both Reaper and Hindenburg is the other one too, that inevitably podcasters I talk to who are across the globe have heard of more than North American folks have, for whatever reason. I don't know why. There's very little marketing of any of those kind of devices or software, but that just seems to be the case. And Reaper in particular, being free to use and then completely uncrippled, and there's no way, like there's nothing that stops you from using it initially, at least. And I just put a link to their wiki for just tutorials and all that kind of stuff. Tons of information on getting going. So bottom line is, the excuse of I can't afford Logic or some of the more expensive packages, I guess,
isn't there.
Yeah.
No, so does stop using not that.
but it's a great way to. I tried Reaper because a friend of mine who's into audio stuff had mentioned it, and it just didn't work with my brain, because I'm just spent too much time staring at Logic Express now, which is itself an older version and probably due for an upgrade. It works on Yosemite, surprisingly, so I'll hang on for a little while longer. But it's to each their own, for sure. But there is plenty of powerful options available, I guess, for folks if they're looking to get into this. So
definitely.
You mentioned a few things, few podcasts in sort of wrapping up what I like to hear from podcasters is podcasts they listen to. And I don't know if you have your podcast player of choice or device or whatever you use, but handy. You mentioned Radiotopia and Alex Bloomberg's Start.
Well, the only Radiotopia show I listen to at the moment is 99PI, 99% Invisible, which is astonishing. It's wonderful. It's great radio. And it has broken the mold in so many respects. First Kickstarter campaign, all the rest of it. And now they've signed up another one that's new to me, Criminal, which is great. I think the website is thisiscriminal.com. And on Twitter, I think there are Criminal Show, something like that. I mean, one of the problems, Chris, is just time to listen. You know, I mean, I walk the dog and listen. Then that's twice a day. The third walk, I don't listen. But you know, I don't listen at my desk. I only listen when I'm out and about. So what else do I listen to? I listen to some radio. I listen to Radio 4 from the BBC. I listen to the food program and Melvin Bragg's program In Our Time, which is a weekly 45-minute discussion program, usually with academics on a huge range of topics. I mean, absolutely everything: science, history, literature, everything. He's sort of the thinking man's polymath, and brilliant. It's like being in a high class university tutorial. Another program that from the BBC is More or Less, which is all about numbers and statistics. Thinking Aloud, which is Allowed. A standard British pun. That's a sort of social science radio program which I listen to. I mean, I'm in Rome, and that's the way I hear stuff from Britain. But I never listen to news programs or any of those. What else? I listen to ADN. There's a guy called Jason Irwin Matigo, who he produced a lovely little series called Discover ADN, which was about people on ADN. And now he's just started a new one called Space Bar, talking about space, which is not a huge interest of mine. And I listen to it because he's a friend. It's good. I don't mean to put it down. It's good. He's only had one episode so far. What else? Well, the Huffduffer thing that we talked about right at the beginning, I find lots of interesting things. I just listened to, for some obscure reason, I can't even remember now, somebody's been linking to some good shows from Australia. So in the past 2 days, I've listened to an interview with Martin Carthy, the folk singer, from an Australian station. Wait a minute. If I look on my player, I should be able to tell you.
What app are you using to play this?
Downcast.
Cool.
I mentioned Startup. Why can't I find it? So I listened to Martin Carthy. That was very fine. I listened to a program from Australia about the history of pho, the Vietnamese soup.
nice.
Oh, really? I mean, I'm pretty eclectic on that stuff. and I listened to... What did I listen to? An Australian show called Future Tense, which was new to me, which was talking about online comments and what to do about the appalling level of discourse in most online comments. Now, you know, will I subscribe to any of those? I really don't know. I might subscribe to the RSS feeds, and then when there's something that interests me, I'll go and add it to my Huffduff stream, and then listen to it. But because I'm a bit completist or anal, if you like. If I've downloaded something, I tend to listen to it. I don't often skip. There are some things that'll trigger an instant skip for me, but by and large, if I've downloaded it, I listen to it, and so I get I get very behindhand very quickly.
Yeah, it's definitely, I know the feeling of not having a commute per se, and so then
it yeah.
kind of limits your time if you don't.
Planet Money. Did I mention Planet Money?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
but, yeah.
Planet Money's great. Phoneboy Speaks. Phoneboy is everywhere. That's like a 3 to 4 minute thing daily. Listen to Lucy. Lucy Kellaway from the Financial Times. She's great. It's a 5 minute podcast once a week. TLDR, which has just changed hands because I think the guys who were on it have gone over to startup. Asimcar, brilliant. Love Asimcar. That's an hour long. Terrible audio quality. Very good ideas. Brilliant ideas. And then a couple that I kind of have given up on, or that Howell Creek Radio hasn't put out anything lately. Yeah, I'm just scrolling through my list. Those are the ones.
Yeah, well, that's a great list of shows for and variety too from previous guests who have, you know, obviously different interests and different things.
So yep.
it's great
yep.
to have a different perspective and often I think, again, whether it's a North American thing or maybe just my exposure to folks over here, where we tend to get fairly definitely, I would, if I can throw the blame down south a bit on the U.S. folks, but tend to be fairly North America centric in our podcast listening, even, and
sure.
we'll have the occasional BBC listen or whatever that show that we like. But even yeah, Australia as a obviously there's a you know a need or a desire for English as the spoken language for a lot of folks here, but
sure,
Australia being quite a large continent and country and having a variety of great shows as well too, and that's
I don't know, you know, I interviewed a guy from Tasmania on my show a little while ago. I've never, New Zealand never comes across my radar, really. Australia does. Canada does. There's some great music shows on CBC.
Mm-hmm.
Podcasts again. I think what you're saying is actually really very interesting, and it's one of the things that interests me most. If I won the lottery and could dedicate myself to this, one of the things I'm very interested in is how do people find podcasts? Because it's, you know, if you're on NPR and leave to make a podcast, of course people are going to follow you. I mean, it's good quality too. He deserves it. But yeah. to go to number 3 after 2 episodes, as Startup has done, in downloads, is phenomenal.
Yeah.
There ought to be a better podcast discovery system. And people have tried having directories and stuff like that, and it hasn't really worked. And I've written down some stuff, and I've talked to people about how you would make it work. I mean, Huffduffer could be that thing, with a little. Well, as you say, Jeremy should take money and yeah. Well, we can't tell him what to do.
Yeah, he's that's. But yeah, that's going to be the. I hate to say eternal problem, but it definitely is a start. And then like the latest thing that people are sort of grabbing onto as well, Apple's putting, you know, the CarPlay thing, and the podcast app is installed by default on iOS devices in iOS 8 now, and so maybe that'll be sort of the next level yeah. of listeners. We'll see.
Yeah, but well, maybe it'll be the next level of listeners. But you know, show me your mic. You know, how do people find it? You've got a terrific stable of things. I mean, I listened to an episode recently involving the numbers that you need to get advertising. The number of downloads you get. Well, those are, for most of us, that number of downloads is just beyond our wildest dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be able to pay my Amazon S3 bill if I got that level of downloading.
Yeah, that's the other chicken and the egg discussion
in
podcasting for sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's, it's the Amazon S3 versus Libsyn is the common argument.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
a discussion to, so for folks who aren't sure and maybe you're just getting into this thing, Libsyn would be one way to look at because it's sort of dedicated price and just paid on storage basis, whereas Amazon is more like cheaper price potentially, but as if all of a sudden your episode spikes and you're linked from the New York Times or something like that, you're going to be paying.
Yeah, bring it on, I say.
Yeah, and that's where, yeah, it's that initial spurt of popularity before you have the sponsor maybe paying and helping. based on your sure. popularity.
And you know, there are good things around like Flatter and Patreon. I haven't got into Patreon. I just started doing Flatter a little while ago. Yeah, I think that's a podcast I didn't mention. Evil Genius podcast. That's one I don't subscribe to, but I have the RSS feed for that. For the website. And if there's a good one, I'll go and huff off it. But you know, I think there are these, there's loads of things with micropayments and what have you floating around, and there are things in the air, and yeah, you know, something's going to happen. Something's going to happen. And I just hope I'm around to take advantage of it. And you are too.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, that's always the thing I think is everybody always says it's, you know, you should have started a podcast 2 years ago or a blog or whatever, but you can still start one now and you'll be set up sure. and like you're doing. It's a great show that you have, and audio quality is obviously of great importance, and you do a great job of that. But more importantly, the story and the conversations you're having are great and interesting, and in spite of, or because of, or depending on your angle, like I was saying, whether you care about Apple specifically or not in Kazakhstan, the story of how, why, and where is just as interesting if you're, even if you have an Apple aversion for some reason. Mac puns aside. So where can folks find you, follow you, all that kind of stuff? What's your
I'm on digits? Well, the website is eatthispodcast.com. The Twitter is eatpodcast, because somebody else had that. I'm on ADN as Jeremy Churfus. You can find me on Facebook, but I'm never there. There is also a kind of mothership site, which is jeremychurfus.net. But I haven't posted there since July. I'm a bad person. I have a bread blogger, site. I have a bread site, which is my other passion. But I haven't posted there for almost as long. So, I won't give it up. I mean, as I say, I use my real name everywhere, so you can find me. I'm there.
Yeah, it's a unique enough name. Do you have trouble getting on new services? Is there another Jeremy Jervis that's fighting with you for
no? Nope. My sister's around, and there may be some long lost relatives, and occasionally, we make contact, but no, basically, no. I am me. I mean, I was very sniffy about Ello, and somebody said, "Well, you better go and get your name." I said, "Who else would want my name?" And they said, "Squatters. What about Squatters?" So I rushed over to Ello and registered my name, and I haven't been back.
Right. Yeah, I had, there's a Chris Enns in Eastern Canada who's apparently getting in a lot of trouble for marijuana issues. Anyways, I don't know all the details. So I sometimes get those Google searches, and then there's someone in the States who was really upset with me for getting the Facebook, you know, your vanity URL name or whatever of Chris Enns, and wrote me an angry response. But we since worked it out. So thus far, peace amongst Chris Enns is on the internet that I'm aware of. So, well, thanks, Jeremy, for joining me on Show Me Mike. If you're listening later and you want to find this, you can find it at goodstuff.fm/smym/58 is the episode number. My thanks, of course, to Campaign Monitor for their support. You can follow Good Stuff, the broadcast network, at goodstuff_FM. I'm iChris on Twitter. And Show Me Your Mic has its own little Twitter account, smym_FM. I am toying with the idea of just starting a bit of a newsletter for Show Me Your Mic. I think I've mentioned this in the past, and haven't figured out exactly the right way to go about this, but I'm going to start with just using your sort of automated publishing out new episodes. So if you prefer, like plenty of you subscribe in iTunes or your podcast player, or maybe you follow the Twitter feed and just click that way. If you'd like to get an email notification each time there's a new episode on the Show Me Your Mic page, goodstuff.fm/smym, there's a Show Me Your Mic newsletter link that you can click. Throw down your email address and I'll send you an email when there's a new episode. And beyond that, it might be like an issue or an email, I guess, once a month beyond that. So nothing too spammy or buy my ebook kind of stuff, just interesting podcasting related stuff that I would be putting out through there. So feel free to sign up. And also one other sort of housekeeping note related to Good Stuff. As of this recording anyways, in 10 days, just over 2 weeks, we're having a Good Stuff meetup here in my hometown of Saskatoon. So if you're interested in that, the link will be in the show notes. If you're connected at all, a listener, a former guest, I don't know if there's any guests who are from I've had on from my area, any of those kinds of things, you're welcome to show up and join us. It'd be great to see you in person. And there might, if shipping things align properly, there might even be some good stuff, stickers, swag there to hand out. So love to see you there. In the meantime, see you next week or whatever time zone that happens to be when you listen to this. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Bye.